Welcome to the Wellbeing Ignites Well-Doing podcast, produced by OOT Social Health, where the focus is on exploring the essential elements that drive organizational success, human-centric leadership. Hosted by Adjoa Boahidi, principal of AKB Talent Edge.
Welcome to the Wellbeing Ignites Well-Doing podcast. My name is Tiagi Delanroll, and I'm going to be your host today. Today, I'm going to be joined by Christian Baudouin, Global Head of Marketing at JLL Work Dynamics. We're going to be speaking about designing workplaces that work for people. Now, Christian's background is not just leading marketing for one of the world's largest work solutions providers. He's also helping redefine how workspaces serve people. As the Global Head of Marketing for JLL Work Dynamics, he oversees strategy for a $12 billion business supporting 80 countries and 1.5 billion square feet of space. But Christian's approach goes beyond the metrics. Recently, he facilitated a compelling conversation with workplace researcher Connie Newton Hadley to explore one of the most under-discussed challenges in the modern workspace, which is around loneliness. Together, they unpacked systematic causes and what organizational leaders must do to restore connection. From hybrid work realities to human-centric storytelling at scale, Christian brings a powerful perspective at the intersection of real estate, marketing, and workplace well-being. So in this episode, what we're going to do is we're going to speak about how to scale purpose-driven marketing across global teams, what leaders can do to design spaces and systems that reduce workplace loneliness, and how JLL is redefining the modern workplace, turning square footage into belonging. Welcome, Christian.
Thank you so much. Thank you for the kind introduction, and it's really nice to be with you.
Yes, thank you so much for making time with us today. So here at the Employee Wellbeing Council, we really believe in, you know, the human at the heart of things. So we're going to begin the podcast by asking a couple Proust-inspired questions that hopefully help us uncover a little bit more about you as a person. Sure. So the very first question is, which talent would you most like to have?
Oh, gosh. I think it's going to sound weird, but talent to understand animals. I think you can understand animals, you can understand people, and you can understand communication. You know, I think you have a unique bond with animals, whether it's a dog or a cat or a pet. And I think there's an incredible opportunity there just to understand more about how they think and how the world works.
I love it. I always feel that animals are very good at sensing auras, and they have very interesting facial cues too.
Right.
So if you get good at understanding animals, you'll probably get good at understanding the facial cues of humans as well.
Right. And that's the ultimate goal, right? So I
agree with you. Absolutely. Okay. All right. Well, this is a little bit of a twist on a question. If you were to die and come back as a person or thing, what would it be?
Gosh, I think it would be a dolphin. I love the water. I love the ocean. I love waves, and I love their communication. Also, you know, dolphins also work in packs and have tight communities and strong communication skills. And so I would hope I would come back as a dolphin somewhere in the South Pacific.
That sounds like a lovely way to come back. And, you know, another amazing podcast interview that we had is Sasha Farley. And, she actually said the same thing. She'd like to come back as a dolphin. So there you go.
Perfect.
You're not the only one there that would love to come back as a dolphin. So we're going to get into a little bit of your work. And in particular, I'm actually going to touch on, you know, what you also talked a little bit about with Connie Newton Hadley, right? And in that South by Southwest event. So from the data to duty, facing loneliness at work. You recently hosted that conversation. What data or insights stood out to you most, and how does it influence your work at JLL?
Sure. I think the most striking data to me is just how pervasive loneliness is in the United States and really how unaddressed it is. You know, per the APA, a third of Americans are struggling daily with some elements of loneliness, and 61% of young people say that they're chronically lonely. To me, that's stunning. And Another somewhat shocking element is just how disconnected we are right now as a society, even though we have so many technologies which are meant to bring us together. And over the last two decades, which is really the growth of communication technology like the iPhone and otherwise, participation in organized community groups is down 20%. Organized religion is down 20%. The rate of volunteering is down 30%. 20% of Americans state that they don't even have a single friend. And when you take all that together, you start to realize that the workplace might be one of the few places left where people are actually meaningfully connecting in person or talking about real issues. And I think we've got a huge opportunity in the workplace to leverage that as a center of social connection, not just work.
I really like that insight. You're right. You know, we spend, I think it feels like a third of our life, right, working. And we are spending so much time. Now more than ever, though, it does feel like we're stuck to the computer. But it's important to kind of take our head out of the sand and look up and realize there's literally a building full of human beings you could connect with who are essentially part of a bit of a tribe, right? Like when you're at work, you're kind of like part of a mission together.
That's right. In the best workplaces, it is a true connection and a true mission. And you can form bonds with people that can last lifetimes. You know, 30 or 40% of friendships for adults are made at work. And even, I think, you know, the latest numbers, it's changing every year, but the latest numbers, around 15% of marriages are the result of people who met at work. So, it's an important place. Work is not just a place to do work. It's also a place for social connection.
Absolutely. I believe that. And I know just looking back, even in my career, some of my best relationships and friendships were formed at work. And so you're absolutely correct. And it's kind of a bit of a sad reality nowadays, right? Where just after COVID, I think things kind of changed a little bit. And it's really sad, especially I think for young folks, right? Folks that are entering in the workspace.
That's right. And I think a lot of young people are missing out on that friendship, that connection, the mentorship from, you know, more senior employees that you might just sit right next to. I think, you know, during COVID or shortly after, there was, at least for a little while, this ideal of the digital nomad, you know, and mm-hmm. you just sit in Bali and work on a laptop. I don't really think that's meaningful work. You know, I think that's, you know, that might work for 3 weeks. I don't know if that works for 30 years of a career.
Yeah. Again, it would feel awfully lonely at times, right? And I think people crave a sense of stability and, you know, continuity to some extent. And you're absolutely correct. So let's talk a little bit about, how the hybrid and open workspaces are going to work. What are some of the ways to build innovative environments that foster real connection?
Sure. Well, on the first part of your question is on hybrid working. And I think the second part is on how you design a workplace. So if you're okay with it, I'll go into both. Regarding hybrid working, I think the biggest mistake that we see a lot of organizations make is just sort of allowing a free-for-all with who shows up and when. And just, okay, if you want to attend on Tuesdays, fine. Or some people come in on Mondays, whatever. Nobody's there on Fridays, it's fine. I think you have to be very intentional about your hybrid work program. You have to be very intentional to have the reason for people to be there together. The best hybrid work programs have flexibility, of course, because we all have lives, but they also have an agreed framework, right? Where we say, all right, let's all be together on Tuesday and Thursday and make sure that we're getting our work together so we can bond, we can connect on real topics, we can collaborate on big problems we have. And then if you want to be home on Monday and Friday, fine, right? So that provides some structure, but it also provides flexibility. I think those are the hybrid work programs that really seem to be working, where people feel like they've got control of their life, but they also have a reason to be there. The worst thing you can do, and this is happening at a lot of companies right now, is that people are coming into the office, but their coworkers aren't there. So they show up at a cubicle and they're on Zoom all day. That is by far the worst case scenario, right? You've commuted an hour to get to an office and then you're just on Zoom and Teams calls or whatever. That's a very unfulfilling way to work. So I think the ideal hybrid work programs bring people together for a purpose for part of the week and then let people do what they need to do for the rest of the week to get their work done independently or to be with their family or whatever. Now, on your question on design, some of the mistakes we see is that there's just almost entirely open plan space, right? That seems to be the primary mistake, is not providing a range of spaces for people to work. So some open space is nice, of course, where you can meet and, you know, you have community time and gathering time, celebration or birthdays and whatever. But you need also about, I'd seen the best offices around 40% of the space is private and enclosed and personal. So people need some time to have a private conversation or talk about finances or call their mom or their doctor. People still need some space to get alone and vary their level of interactions with people. And so that's how I kind of guide our clients on designing their space. Maybe you want 60% of the space open for working in desks, cubicles, and whatever. You want 40% of the space to be private and personal.
That's a really interesting take, right? And I'm also noticing that there's like almost like smaller gathering spaces as well. I'm noticing that take form as well within a lot of corporate environments. I think that's really interesting to kind of have that dynamic in space.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. The dynamic you just mentioned, that kind of variability of space is what can make it powerful. There's space over here to gather. There's space over here to celebrate. There's space here to chat. There's space here to have a private conversation. And that diversity of spaces makes it much stronger. When you just try to go all open plan and everyone's just on like a airplane hangar, that's hard, right? Where, how do you call home and just have a conversation, right?
Absolutely. It also goes to the point of humans, you know, we want flexibility. We want variety. And I think it's great when employers really understand that piece of the puzzle, that it's part of, as we roll out things like AI into companies, right, that you're doing this with at least the knowledge that there's also humans that are working there in conjunction, right, to execute on company goals.
That's right.
So let's talk about a little bit about marketing and how it centers around people. With your global scale, how do you ensure your team tells stories that reflect human needs, not just business outcomes?
Sure. You hit on the exact word, and that's stories, right? The most important word in that question is stories. The best story always wins, no matter what you are promoting or no matter what product your business sells. And I think storytelling is the key to successful marketing, no matter what industry. I really like to tell stories on our end about celebrating our clients. And my favorite marketing externally or advertising or whatever you call it is a show of our clients, what they've done for their people or for their teams or for their customers, and then how we help to make that possible. So for instance, just take, I'll take one client, which we have a public, you know, client story, GE Healthcare, right? Which is revitalizing the world of healthcare and patient care around the world. We've helped their real estate team bring their people together. So I like to celebrate Dan Kirshner, the head of real estate at GE Healthcare, and say, Dan has helped make all this possible. JLL was here to support them. That, I like to tell those stories because we, in a business-to-business, B2B environment, are mostly supporting other companies to do their work. So we allow manufacturers to make the best cars because we're supporting them in their real estate, right? We're helping them get their people together in the right ways. We're helping pharmaceutical companies come with the next therapeutics and the next life-saving drugs. And we're doing that by helping them design and build the best labs. And so I like to tell the stories through our clients and the outcomes that they deliver.
That's fantastic, right? Stories, I think, are such powerful ways to persuade, right? To share knowledge, but also to persuade in the best way possible. So right now we're in an awkward position, I think, in terms of an era of disconnection. Even though we're digitally so connected, we also have this kind of element of disconnection. How do you stay connected to your people and customers, even as teams become increasingly disconnected?
Sure. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I think that there's a correction now against teams becoming more and more remote. I think there's a realization that there are incredible benefits to being together. And the way we stay connected with our clients is actually by doing it in person. And I'll fly to Dallas or I'll fly to Dubai if it takes it to meet with a client, help understand their needs, even if it's just for coffee, and then I'll go back home because I do think it's absolutely critical to understand our clients and where they are. And sometimes you only get that in person. You know, sometimes you can only get that when you're, you know, having a meal or taking a walk and chatting about what's really on their mind. And sometimes that's not even work. Sometimes that's what's going on in their personal or professional life. And I think connection to us is building deep relationships with people. And it actually starts with being in person. You can supplement every, you know, here and there with phone calls and Zoom. But the best connections, we believe, are still formed in person. And I think it kind of ties to your earlier question of how it works in the workplace. I think that same approach applies to clients and customers.
Yeah, that's such a, well, I feel like it's a very caring way of, you know, working with your clients too, right? Because it's such a, I think that actually flying out and seeing someone, spending the money and taking the time out of your schedule to make that effort goes a really long way in building trusting relationships. So I think it's kind of the foundation of how you build trust too, right?
I think so. I hope so. To me it is. You know, it's true of customers and it's true of family, right? It's just taking time to be there and taking time to be together with them. And sometimes it's in, I find that over Teams or in Zoom, people have agendas and they kind of hit them quickly and then you move on, right? And you kind of get to your next call. Whereas if you're with someone in real life, the quiet moments sometimes matter more and you can learn a little bit just by listening and hear what comes up in between. It's important to remember that, at least for me, for most of our clients, they're all going through some sort of change, right? Again, whether it's personal or professional, and they're all working through something that may or may not be career related, you know, or immediate project related. It might not be something you can make money from, you know, that day, right? But it may be something that over time you can help them work through. Maybe they want to be the CFO of their company and they're currently leading real estate and operations and you might know how to get them there over time. Even though that's not going to help you, it's helping them over the long run. And I think JLL is just very, you know, the company where I work is just very dedicated to deep relationships and teamwork and ethics and making sure that we're there for our clients short term and long term.
That's such a great outlook. And it's great that it seems like your values align with JLL's values. So it's good that you found a great organization, right, to align your values to.
Yeah.
So speaking of values, right, and in your case, building a brand with JLL, you're at the intersection of real estate and human experience. So what's your view on the role of brand in shaping workplace culture, especially in B2B spaces?
Yeah. In reality, brand is everything. And a brand is not a logo, and a brand is not a tagline, and a brand is not a commercial. A brand is really the combination and the accumulation of how you treat people over time and the quality of the product or service that you deliver. And that over time builds brand. And you can have a good logo and you can have a good song that goes on your commercial and all that. You can have people remember things, but a brand is really how you make someone feel. And it has to be built over time through consistency and quality of product or quality of service. And it's got to be delivered in every case, whether it's good economic times or bad economic times. And it really relies on consistency. So to me, brand is everything because it is everything. You know, it's not just not just one element. It's really how everyone at your company shows up every single day.
Yeah, it's such a great, interesting way of looking at it. It's everything, but it's not just like colors and like just your logo, right? Like it's how it makes your customers feel and how you make your employees feel, I think.
That's exactly right. And a lot of companies think here's something we do, and then let's ask the marketing team to work on our brand, right? And that's the completely wrong approach. What we do is our brand. How we do it is our brand. And I think how our people show up and how they live our culture is our brand, whether we're making something or whether we're providing a service. Really how you behave and how everybody behaves collectively is the brand. It's yeah, like you said, it's not colors. It's not, you know, an image or if anything you can sell in a commercial. It takes a long, long time to build and maintain.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel that a brand also really speaks to the values, right, of the organization. So, and that permeates throughout company culture, as well as like how you approach things externally, how you respond to things like trends and whatnot.
You're absolutely right. And there are different times economically or different times politically where you can really show who you are and what you stick for, and what matters. And do you kind of sway with the economic or political wins, or do you have things that you really stand for, regardless of the environments?
Absolutely. Especially nowadays, right? Yeah. When things are a little bit more politically charged than most.
That's right.
You know, just speaking from the lessons that you've kind of experienced, from in your case, engineering to executive leadership, you've started as a structural engineer. What parts of this mindset have served you in navigating complex leadership and now marketing challenges?
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I did. I started my career as an engineer for over 10 years, and I just learned so much there. Incredible mentors I had, Bob Halverson, or like Jim Swanson, who ingrained in me ethics and doing the right thing. So that's number one, and that applies to any career in any field you're in. But also, engineering gives you the background of problem solving and trying to start with first principles and analyze a problem from its most basic principles and then building from there. And when you're designing a building or designing a bridge, or something around the world, you've just got to start with the basic principles. What's the goal of this? And then how can we get there the most efficient way? And I still take that mindset to anything we do, whether that's marketing or whether that's, you know, client relationship or sales. What's our goal and what's the most efficient way to get there? So engineering has really instilled that in me. For number one, doing the right thing. Number two, getting to a solution in the most efficient way possible.
Yeah, I can only imagine, right, how analytical your thinking is as it relates to a very creative field of marketing. So,
yeah, thank you. I love it. I love the creative element of marketing, but I think it works best when you've got an analytical framework behind it. So at least that's what I'm trying to do.
I'm sure it's working out extremely well. Now, you also have a global strategic direction, but it seems like you also take a bit of a local approach. So what are some of the key considerations you take when creating marketing narratives that land across 80 countries? Like that's a lot.
Yeah, no, it's funny right now. You've mentioned the political environment, you know, which seems to be very focused on our differences and our tensions, you know, between different people or different groups or different countries. But you said it well. I have a global role, and I mean, in all of my experiences, there are so many more commonalities among people across countries and across cultures than there are differences. Again, it doesn't matter if you're in Dallas or if you're in Denver or in Dubai again or whatever. We all want to feel safe and to feel loved and to feel connected. We all want to take care of our families and provide them with opportunities. We all want to be a part of something bigger and make things better. I think that's true no matter where you are politically, no matter where you are in the world, and where you are geographically. If we focus on those core needs in our messaging, right? Safety, love, connection, family. That's what everyone cares about, no matter where you are. And I think we can find some common ground there and have messages that resonate no matter where you are.
That's phenomenal. I was recently looking at some of the LinkedIn posts from this one gentleman. His name is Zach Mercurio, and he is he's phenomenal. He's actually launching a book on mattering, and kind of, you know, what you've just shared kind of relates to mattering. I think it's extremely important for humans to be seen and heard, and there's certain things that are kind of universal, like you said, right? Like love, caring, family, all of that. And I think even when it comes to work, mattering at work, knowing that your work matters.
Yeah, I love the way you phrase that, because it's true. Yeah, it's knowing that your work matters and knowing that you matter to a group, right?
Absolutely.
I think, yeah, that's a lot of people feel like they're missing that. And there's a huge opportunity for companies to take more ownership of that and make sure that their employees do feel like their work matters and that they matter to them.
Yeah, I think the other thing that I think is really important is just having the opportunities within the work environment, right? That's where these spaces are important as well, that you have an opportunity to connect and be seen and heard and feel like there's almost just that human element when you do come into the office. So, you know, just before we wrap up, I want you to put on your futuristic hat. Right. And let's think into the future of the modern workplace. What trends do you think will most significantly impact how companies invest in their space, people, and brand?
Gosh, you know what? I'm going to go contrarian here today, and I'm not going to say AI because everybody is talking about AI and the impacts it's going to have. Mm-hmm. I think AI is going to simplify things for us. I think it's going to simplify a lot of tasks. I do think it's going to upend the way many people work. But technology has done that for the last 100 years. I think, of course, if you're an accountant now, you're not doing it in a notebook. You're doing it on Excel or an automated software, right? I think a lot of things we do going forward are going to be automated, and many road processes will be much more automated through AI. But I think the most important dynamic going forward is going to be analytical thinking and social connection. I think that can't be automated, right? And leadership and caring about people and mentoring and growing careers and connecting with people on a meaningful level. To your point earlier about having people matter, that can't be automated with AI. So I think that's going to have a significant impact on how we think of the world of work going forward.
That's so insightful. And I think you're right on the money. We were just speaking with CEO Adriana Pion, who is the president of the Americas for Decathlon. And she also said the analytical thinking piece is very critical in asking, like really understanding how to ask the right questions, right? And be, you know, kind of dig into to things as data is now more easily surfaced.
Right.
That's going to be very critical for businesses. But to your point around connection, right? I think connection will lend well to creativity.
I agree completely. Yeah, I think you're totally right. And it does, because people can inspire you. I mean, you know, you've got to work alone sometimes, but other people just can give you a little spark that you hadn't thought of to create something that's new and beautiful. And I agree with you on the last comment. Asking the right questions is more important than finding the answers, right? Anyone can find the answer now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know, Christian, we're at the tail end of our conversation. I want you to now I asked you in the last question to put on your futuristic hat and think into the future. Now I want you to, you know, look back on your life into your early 20s. And if you were to give your younger self one piece of advice, what would that be?
Ooh, I'm going to stay on the theme that we've been discussing today. And that would actually be to double down on connection. It would be to connect more, to network more. It'd be very intentional about building and nurturing relationships. You know, at that age, I'm naturally an introverted person and I've always prioritized sort of head down, do the work, study, right? And I've prioritized that over socializing. But I've learned over that last 20 years, the quality of your life is really defined by the quality of your relationships and how you're getting along with the most important people in your life. And I'm more and more thankful every day for my friends and family and the amazing people that I get to work with every day. And that matters a lot more sometimes than if I've finished the spreadsheet or if I've gotten that report out the door or if we finished that project. It's the most important thing to me is the relationships. So that's where I would focus.
Fantastic. And I think there is a Harvard study that would agree with you wholeheartedly, right? There's a lot more data now that's surfacing around, you know, social health and social connection and the importance of relationships and what it means to our mortality and our healthy, like as we age, how healthy and happy we're also going to be. So I think that is very good advice to your younger self and probably really good advice for a lot of folks that may be listening as well. Thank you so much, Christian, for your time today. We appreciate it from the Employee Wellbeing Council.
Thank you so much. It was so nice speaking with you.
Thank you for joining us on the Wellbeing Ignites Well Doing podcast, brought to you by OOT Social Health. We hope today's conversation has sparked new insights and inspired you to prioritize well-being in your journey to organizational success. Remember, when well-being ignites, well-doing follows. Stay tuned for more episodes as we continue to explore the power of human-centric leadership. Until then, be well and lead with purpose.